All right, welcome, 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 welcome. My name is Erin Backus, and this is the Aha Moment. I have with me my co-host, Irene.
Hello, everybody. Irene Barber up in Maine.
And episode 20, Irene, can you believe it?
I can't. I'm amazed. Yay!
I just, actually, let me introduce, we also have with us tonight our guest, Jennifer Smith-Sims. Say hello, Jen.
Hello. Good to be here.
Before I do Jen's intro, I just wanted to say to our listeners, thank you very much for listening. This is up on Podbean. And Irene, I don't know if you know these stats, but we have had listeners from the past year. We've had listeners from, of course, the U.S., Australia, United Kingdom, South Africa, Italy, Taiwan, Indonesia, New Zealand, Puerto Rico, and Romania.
Oh so, my God, that is so fantastic. That's so great.
That's really awesome to really kind of see that disperse.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I think that's even more since the last time you told me so, which was not all that long ago. That's really exciting.
Yes, it definitely has increased since last time I told you, but I finally figured out how to do it the whole year. There's so many statistics on this Podbean thing. I'm like, oh, wait, I can see that. Cool, I can see that. So it's kind of fun. Anyways, mm-hmm. I just want to give that shout out and to all our followers and downloaders and listeners. Thank you very much for coming on and listening to us. We have 458 downloads, and currently this is our 20th episode. And I don't know how many followers we have. I got to figure out how to do that. See how many followers we have. But we have more than we used to, so that's good. 21 followers now.
All right.
Okay,
it is so disproportionate of how many views people's. It's interesting. All of you who listen to us, please click on the follow link. We would love that so much because we really want to have something of a more representation of those who actually listen to our podcast, and we want to spread the word. And so the more clicks we get, the more we're ranked up into the podcast world. So please think of that.
Yeah, click and share and follow. Anyways, welcome to episode 20. Jen, it's so great to have you on tonight, and it's so good to see you. Just give you a little bit of background about Jennifer. She is an HTR and is the manager of public programs in the education division at the Missouri Botanical Garden. She also is a registered horticultural therapist since 2006. Jennifer oversees the adult education, youth and family, and therapeutic horticulture programs. Her background is in horticulture, therapeutic design, and accessibility and inclusion. She began her career at the garden as an instructor, sharing the love of plants and nature with senior citizens living in a senior facilities in the community and at the garden. Now at the garden for 20 years, she enjoys sharing her strong passion for accessibility and inclusion for all, especially when it comes to access to our cultural institutions and connecting to all plants and nature in order to increase their well-being. She continues to facilitate programs with individuals who are blind and visually impaired, children in crisis, and seniors in skilled care nursing and memory care communities. In order to learn as much as possible about HT, Jennifer has been attending HT conferences since 2004 and has proudly served on the board of the AHTA from 2016 to 2020. So it is so great to have her on, and welcome.
Thank you. Very good to be here. Good to see you guys.
Thanks for joining. Something that struck me about what your position is at the Missouri Botanic Garden is the term accessibility and inclusion within the therapeutic horticulture. Can you elaborate a little bit more as to what that encompasses, what that consists of?
Sure. At a public garden, you know, it's kind of one of those things where the other duties as assigned, you know, it gets attached to your job. And I have always had a passion for accessibility, for inclusion. before I even knew what inclusion meant, you know, helping people with disabilities. Really, it came natural to me at the garden when and fell into my lap, and I took it on, and they gladly gave it to me in my role. Because as someone who was doing therapeutic horticulture, someone who was educating seniors who were coming to the garden of all ability levels, I was seeing the barriers. So giving tours, teaching programs out in the garden, I would run into barriers. And because I was bringing in populations that had these various ability levels, it was in our face all the time. And I was the one who honestly was embarrassed for the institution. So, and because it was a passion of mine my whole life, I just decided I need to do something about this. I need to bring this to people's attention. And so I started setting up procedures and setting up protocols and drawing attention to certain areas that needed some accessibility measures put in place. It just naturally came my way. So then the more I did that, the more people came to me with issues, came to me with problems. How can we address this? What can we do differently? And our programs, simultaneously, our programs were growing. And we were working with not just seniors anymore. We were working with kids from special school districts with autism. We were working with Easter Seals, or kids with various disabilities. Same, you know, Variety Club, children's charity here in St. Louis. Same thing was happening. And so it just became very front and center for us as an institution. I started an accessibility committee back then. Got one person from every department and division to be represented so that I could not only educate everybody and get them on the same playing field, but that I could do more because they were, you know, more people doing things to make the garden more accessible. So, you know, I started doing a training, just a accessibility 101 for all staff. And I always started out every training saying, here is why I'm doing what I do. Here is why you're listening to me, you know, this person in education, because I am bringing in the populations and the audiences that have different abilities, and we are not set up to provide a meaningful experience for them. Mm-hmm. And we need to do better. And so when I would point things out, they're like, oh, they just don't think about it. You know, if you don't know anybody with a disability, you only know your own world, right? So it was really an awareness. And like, this has been over 20 years and we have come a very long way. And I'm proud to say I can hand that hat over to our director of accessibility director of diversity and inclusion and belonging. We now have an official position in senior leadership that reports to the president in that position, which could not thrill me more, because that's really what it takes to make a culture change at the garden and to get everybody invested. And it really just started with me working with, you know, seniors coming from a nursing home that couldn't get around, honestly.
Yeah. That's really wonderful, Jennifer. We at the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, we have an area that we've incorporated, well, a committee that we've added called the Idea Committee. So it has similar reasons as to what you're talking about. Yeah, that's so impressive that you were able to get that insert, that awareness and that understanding at the end, that the gardens really listen to you. That's really awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah. Where you're at in horticultural therapy, or as you refer to therapeutic horticulture at the Missouri Botanic Gardens, can you maybe help us understand, or help our listeners understand a little bit more about why you refer to it as therapeutic horticulture versus horticultural therapy at Missouri Botanic Gardens?
Sure. So I follow the AHTA's definition of therapeutic horticulture. I've always felt, you know, we do a little bit of both, but primarily therapeutic horticulture is when we're not working with a clinical team. You know, we're not documenting necessarily very particular notes on certain goals for individuals. We work mostly with groups. We might have a general goal for the group. We work with other therapists. We work with social workers and get to know the population, get to know what might work best for them. But, you know, it's very, there are many times where it's very passive in what we do, where we are focusing on getting the group out in the garden, getting them to appreciate plants and nature, maybe working with them to de-stress, to be a diversion from what's going on. So it's a little more passive, if you will.
Now, and, we and do for more so like an overall well-being approach and not so clinically customized.
Yes, exactly. Now we do have a few contracts in the community in our outreach where we do really work more one-on-one with either a patient or a client where we can really focus the goals and work closely with the other therapist or social worker. But that's more limited in what we do. We have worked in hospitals before where we can work with a team, but that's rare. It's mostly therapeutic horticulture by definition. So that's what we chose.
All right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So tell us a little bit about your journey, your experience of discovering horticultural therapy, whether it was from a very wee age in your life, or maybe as an adult, or in several points in your life.
Okay. Well, that was hard to really pinpoint, but I will say it's very easy now to reflect back, you know, and look at how I grew up, you know, to see why did I choose what I'm doing? Why, you know, is this what I'm meant to do for my life? How did this happen? And I look back and I reflect on as a kid. I mean, I wasn't one of those kids that, you know, I gardened all the time. I didn't do that. I lived in an apartment. We didn't have our own land to garden. I played in the woods. You know, I played on the dirt hill. I climbed the crabapple trees. You know, I didn't have land of my own.
Did you grow up in Missouri?
I did. I grew up in St. Louis.
Okay.
In an apartment complex. And, you know, where I stayed out till the streetlights came on, you know, that story. My mom would scream, you know, for me, and I came running. You know, a funny story I share sometimes is, right in front of our apartment, you know, there's 300 apartments. They all look exactly the same, but right in front of our apartment was a patch of iris that would come up every spring. Now we never planted those. I'm sure whoever lived there before, you know, planted those, but I just assumed they came up naturally. We were just very lucky people because they came up in our apartment, but no one else had them. But I had no concept that you actually plant those. They just come up. But I would cut them. And, you know, iris, German iris, don't last but one day after you cut them. So the concept of cut flowers was not very positive for me. Because
it didn't have an appeal. It just like, you well, that really was fun. Killing the flower right off the bat.
Yeah, like, well, that sucks. That was not worth it. But anyway, yes. But I would always cut those flowers and bring them wherever we were going. So if we were going to my grandma's, I'd cut them and bring her a bouquet, you know? Mm-hmm. And so not really thinking too much of it back then, but it was just something inherent. I always wanted to bring flowers, you know, to someone that we were visiting. You know, I didn't grow up planting things, but I really did grow up understanding the value of being outdoors, being in nature, what that did for me, how it made me feel. You know, I was an only child, so I needed to get out and, you know, do stuff and collect leaves and collect sticks and collect rocks. I had more shoeboxes of rocks than I know what to do with. You know, so that's kind of how I grew up. And it wasn't until, I loved animals. So I always knew I would do something with plants and or animals, something outdoors. Right. But it wasn't until, I was in junior college that I got a job at a nursery, and it just changed my whole outlook on what I was going to do. I love the variety of plants. I loved the families. I love their names. I thought botanical Latin was cool. I'm one of those geeky people who really loves to dig deep into what does the Latin mean. And it really just kind of opened my eyes to this world where you can buy plants and plant them. You can propagate plants. That I thought was super cool. My grandma would propagate, and I just thought that was amazing, you know, that you can make more plants. I was really going to go into oceanography. So I was learning how to scuba dive. I was learning about the flora and fauna of the marine world. I was studying, you know, oceanography, marine biology. But I took a quick turn to really focus on botany and horticulture and landscape design. And I've always kind of been an artsy kid, loved to draw. And so it kind of blended. It blended everything. It was outdoors, it was plants, it was design, it was, you know, the artistic elements of that. And so I just started heading down that path. But parallel to this, my whole high school and college life, I always volunteered for being an assistant to someone with disabilities. So I have family in special school district. I would help and volunteer and take notes for people who couldn't use their hands. There was a gentleman in who went to Merrimack, which is our community college here. He would take his classes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I would take him to his class, take his notes for him, help him with homework and things like that. And I would take all my classes on the opposing days. I did that all through community college. And so I've always been active and involved in helping others with disabilities so that they can be as independent as possible, so that they could, you know, pursue their dreams and what they wanted to do, but just needed a little assistance in that. So again, this is all reflective because I would never thought about this at the time, but it just was something that fills my bucket, that makes me get up in the morning, that I just feel good doing. So it was natural for me to blend the two. Okay, now I know a lot about plants. I love plants. I love, you know, putting gardens together, but now I'm going to do it for people who maybe can't do it themselves or who will benefit from it in some way. And so that's, you know, how I feel like I blended the two passions that I had growing up.
So do you have a degree then in, you said in horticulture, is that right?
Yes.
Is that from Merrimack as well? Or?
No, I transferred from, after Merrimack was done, I got a horticulture degree there, but then I went on to Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, and got a bachelor's in plant science. And then I specialized in landscape design.
Yeah. When did you officially become a horticultural therapist as far as the registration process? Was that a quick kind of 18-month process, or was that a long-term kind of three-year, you know, because you're working, or what was your path like on that end of it?
So in horticulture, and I'm going to date myself here, but I did pretty much every avenue of horticulture you can think of, from, you know, nursery trade, greenhouse work, golf course work, maintenance work, all of it. Off, you know, doing nursery management. Every job I had, I found myself educating people, always talking to people about plants, the cool things about plants. So education comes very naturally to me. I would teach classes at nurseries about the plants. The job came up at the Missouri Botanical Garden 20 years ago, and it was teaching in education, teaching senior citizens in senior living facilities, as well as seniors at the garden. And these were low income, it's a grant funded program, teaching at the garden. And I jumped at the chance. I thought, this is perfect. This is blending education and horticulture and helping others. When I got that job, my boss at the time was an HTR. That's really when I learned that there was a real thing, you know, that I liked, called something. And you know, that's when I learned what HTA was, and I learned there's a profession, and I learned there's a whole, you know, methodology here. And I just started learning as much as I could. And so I was working in the nursing homes. I went to 12 different nursing homes a month, same ones every month, and really got to know the residents. And then I was also teaching about 10 classes a month at the garden. And I did that for about two, three years, until my boss left the garden. And then I was promoted to supervisor of therapeutic. Well, actually, it was called supervisor of senior programs at the time. But I became an HTR under the point system, which is an older system, through time served. So I was doing hours of time served. I was learning under her. I went to every, since 2004, I was going to the workshops or the conferences, you know, and at that time you would earn points for going to conferences and learning in those areas. So when I became supervisor of senior programs, that's when I decided to change the name to therapeutic horticulture programs, because I really felt strongly that what we were doing could be done with other groups and other populations. And I didn't want to limit us to just seniors. So that's when I pulled in my contacts of working with kids with special needs at the time is what we call it, special needs, you know, working with special school districts. And I worked with four different classrooms. There was four classrooms of kids with autism. And that's where we started, was working with them. They had a greenhouse they weren't using. They had a garden, ironically had a bunch of iris in it, and that was it. And so full circle. But, you know, I helped the staff that was dedicated to that, get that greenhouse up and going and get the garden to be more diverse, more than just iris, and started working with them. And so changing the name was really important, because it's allowed us to not only educate people what that means, what that is,
right,
but also I don't have to say no to any one particular group, you know, and we've really diversified. That would have been 2006. And so we've come a very long way.
Well, and the titling of therapeutic horticulture has a much more like enriching, you know, approach. I feel like senior program sometimes is a very limiting term in the sense of what they're actually getting out of it as well. So
exactly.
Yeah. Is there a population whom you just felt like, you know, you started with helping, doing some volunteer service at the college and so forth, but was there a population that really kind of drew you to the gardens, aside from, is it the senior groups then in that case that you started with? And do you feel like there's a population even now, actually, as a programmer and supervisor of the program there, that isn't necessarily being served as well as they could be, or they're not coming to the gardens, and so the outreach is a little bit more of an effort?
At first, I thought you were going to ask me who my favorite was. And I'm like, oh, Lord, don't make me pick. Because
No. I know better not to say that.
Yeah.
I know.
You know, that ebbs and flows, honestly, Irene, because, you know, there are times when I feel like, you know, the kids in special school district, the kids with disabilities, like they would come for a field trip, but are they really getting anything out of it? Were they, you know, they would come do a self-guided tour. And I felt like if I could do a program for them, if, you know, at the time we were caring for the sensory garden, if I could do something hands-on in the sensory, it would be so much more meaningful for them. There were times when I really wanted to get in front of these classes first so that I could make it more meaningful and impactful when they come and establish a relationship with them. You know, COVID has really changed things though, because there are, you know, this senior living facilities, the senior living communities were in such isolation.
Yep.
And now I'm more drawn to staying connected with them and making sure I can either get to them or they can come to us, that they can benefit from the plant interaction and bringing nature to them. You know, so it has ebbed and flow flowed over the years as far as who I feel needs it the most or who's is underserved. Pre-COVID, right before that, we were really investing our time in with kids who are in crisis centers. So through no fault of their own, they're thrown into these crisis centers that are open 24/7. Their parents, you know, whether they're being evicted from their home, whether it's domestic abuse, whether it's, you know, electric's getting shut off, you know, all kinds of things. Sometimes, you know, mom has a diagnosis of cancer and they have no family to go to and mom's not feeling well, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why these kids are there, but these kids are 0 to 12. They're through an organization called St. Louis Crisis Nursery, and they have multiple locations. And, you know, they supply, you know, diapers and formula and socks and clothes and shoes and all the things to the communities that they're in. But the one thing that was missing was these kids are out of school. You know, they don't go to, once they're put in this situation for their safety, they're out of school. And so what I wanted to do was bring our, like our Little Sprouts program, or kit, you know, that we have at the garden, which these kids are never going to come for a Little Sprouts fee-based program, right?
Right, right.
But these kids need it more than ever. You know, they need not only a little bit of education, they need that plant interaction. They need a little nature education, you know, nature interaction. Anything I can do to get them outside, get them thinking about something else. And so we were really heavy, you know, working with them right before COVID, and that program was doing really, really well. I mean, the kids were amazing and funny, and, you know, they don't get to make choices, right? Like everything's out of control. And so I would just design things that would help them, you know, give them choices and have them make something of their very own that was small, but they, cause they may not be going home per se. But you know, that we have just gotten back to that programming a couple of months ago. So I'm on a high with them right now, but those kids, and this was a really hard time for them too. You know, these families.
I definitely empathize with that as far as the groups that were in, I mean, all most of our populations for doing horticultural therapy are those who need it regularly, but particularly in moments of where we're all in a stressful environment, you know, and they don't have a support system that many of us are privileged to have. So it's really, really, it's really awesome when we can get back to connecting them to the plants and everything. Yeah. So that time of your life when you were going through college and I just want to summarize, when you were going through college and you were seeing how you volunteer service with those individuals who didn't have visibility or perhaps couldn't have the capability of writing, you were helping them out, and then you were taking your horticulture classes. And then when this job came about, you said, oh my God, I gotta do something in this realm of horticulture and service at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I think a lot of people will empathize or understand exactly what you experienced there. One thing, so when you were starting off, there's a question that I'm going to throw over to Aaron, but when you were starting off and you were really getting your hands into the programmatic aspect of it, like you had to start really thinking on your toes and getting the plants, you know, that you wanted to use, I want you to start thinking about that. And now Aaron is going to ask you a question.
Nice try with the.
There's never a really natural segue to this all that time.
I don't know why we can't ever get this question.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Anyways.
So I have this epic last question, I guess you'd say.
It's an epic.
throughout your years, I know it's probably very hard. And some people could like pinpoint to a few, and some people, oh my gosh, you can't do that to me, Erin. But like, what is your go-to plant? Or even if you want to generalize it and put like a go-to genus or whatever, what is your go-to plant that you like to use in sessions?
Something other than an iris.
Oh God. I don't even own a German iris here at my house. Well, so I would say lavender. Ooh. Because again, I do programming with those from age 2 to 102. Mm-hmm. And I have never met anyone who didn't like it. You know, kids love it. Kids love it. They like the flowers. They like that every aspect, every part of it smells, has the oil in it. It brings back memories for those who are older, and we have good conversations around it. I've had little kids. I just had a little girl who's 5 who, you know, she smelled it and she's like, oh, I remember, this is in mom's soap. Like, she made a memory connection. So I would say lavender. There's so much you can do with it. I mean, we've done many, many, many things with it. One I will never do again is the lavender fan, because that was super high maintenance. Making a lavender fan, you know, you take the blossoms.
Oh my gosh.
And you line
That's
them up.
Intensive.
You weave ribbon through it. And you literally make, they're beautiful, but I'll never do it again because it takes forever. But
that's like those lavender wands. What a pain in the butt.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, if we need a quick activity, lavender sachets.
Yeah.
And I have never met a group who didn't love it.
Yeah. You know, I concur. Definitely.
Yep.
It's funny you should say that you haven't met a person who doesn't really like lavender, because Erin is pointing to herself.
Okay, I met one.
Not me. I can't do it. It's my,
She's the 1% of the plant people who can't handle lavender.
Oh, that's funny. Well, now we've met one.
I actually, there was a moment that I had injured one of my olfactory nerves after being very sick, and it took a long time for it to rehabilitate and get my sense of smell again. And so smell and taste was totally altered. I couldn't handle lavender, rosemary, onions, milk, garlic. Like,
oh, wow.
Very eccentric, but very important essences in my life, like flavors and aromas. And it was so just so disappointing to me, because I love lavender. And so that for 18 months to 2 years, I couldn't handle it. I could not handle the essence of it. It was very sad. But now I can get back into it again. It's really amazing how we all have to just remember, don't take your senses for granted.
That's,
you know,
right.
Whatever you have, you better be very grateful what you've got. So,
yeah, I have a lady I work with Society for the Blind. I teach flower arranging to them once a month. Mm-hmm. I've worked with them for 11 years, and she cannot smell or see. Mm. And so I'm always choosing things that are very highly tactile. Mm. But lavender, mm-hmm. she can remember what mm-hmm. lavender smelled like. And of course, there's all kinds of great textures on it. And lavender has so much essential oil in it that it's kind of tacky. You can feel mm-hmm. it like on your mm-hmm. skin.
Interesting.
But she enjoys it, even though she can't smell mm-hmm. it at all.
Well, it's a cognitive memory. So yep. it starts to develop an emotion for her. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
What are some tactile things you use in your flower arranging? What are some examples? I'm curious.
I've used a lot of celosia lately, mm. different types yep. of celosia. I use a lot of scented geraniums, because mm-hmm. There's the fuzzy ones and the slick ones, and gomphrena. I use gomphrena yep. a lot. Zinnias. I use zinnias quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Most things this year, at least, I grew at home. Because mm-hmm. we were still working hybrid, so I would cut from home.
Do you ever use echinacea without the mm-hmm. petal, without the bracts, and just like the head itself?
Yeah, I've used echinacea and the rudbeckia.
Yep.
And I have grasses, prairie drop seed, I love to use, mm-hmm. Especially this mm-hmm. time of year. But it's funny, because when I have to buy cut flowers, like at our wholesale cut flower place, I'm the one who's in there like feeling everything, like touching.
Yeah, exactly.
How does this feel? Oh, closing no. my eyes. They're like, what is that weird lady doing? But I just sniffing stuff and I'm touching. But there's, you know, scabiosis seed heads. And, you know, I've even done like kangaroo paws from mm-hmm. Australia, you know, mm-hmm. kind of some fun exotic things, proteas for them to feel. Yeah. You just look at plants a little differently when you're working with an audience like that.
Yeah. That reminds me, I want to grow a pineapple mm-hmm. in my garden, like a bromeliad pineapple. I definitely want to. And then the air plants too. The air plants are fun to have because they are tactilely very different and they don't take up much space at all. So
that's right. I had a patient make me a pineapple once. It was really cool. He took a pineapple, like he cut the top off and he soaked it in water and started rooting. And he was there long enough for me to have it rooted and he gave it mm-hmm. to him. We put it up. Yeah.
That's great. Awesome. Jennifer, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for your contribution of your story. And I hope people will take a chance. If you wouldn't mind, would you be willing to share your email address?
Sure, absolutely. Listeners. Absolutely. It's very easy. It's jsmith@mobot.org.
Okay, great. So if anyone has any questions about therapeutic horticulture or some of the details about the accessibility inclusion work that you've done in the past, that will be great for them to reach out to you.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you, Jen. I hope we can come and visit you soon.
That yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good night, everyone.